Hey everyone, this amazing ESO Network show is brought to you by our fine sponsor, Amazon.com. Please remember to shop Amazon for all your geeky needs, no matter what time of the year it is. All you need to do is go to ESOpodcast.com/ESOAmazon or click on the Amazon banner on the ESO Network webpage to go to our e-store. It's the best way to shop and the best way to support this program, and it doesn't cost you anything extra. Okay, that's enough of me babbling for now. Now on with your regular scheduled show.
Hey, cats and kittens, this is John Morgan Nail, your host for the Pro Wrestling Roundtable. And, of course, as always, in there doing all that stuff I don't understand, Richard Yule, making sure that the show goes on, right, is with us. And then, as always, our roving reporter in Bombay, the one and only Jonathan Williams from WrestlingandPulpCulture.com. And this time he's bringing us, we're going to have a little discussion with Mike Posey. And then we will discuss and go back in time to WrestleMania 23, which just so happens to feature the current president of the United States in a feud against Vince McMahon and lots of other stuff. So sit back and give a listen, and you'll be entertained, I think.
Check out what's been going on with the Pop Culture Cosmo Show and the PCC Multiverse.
I would say Rogue One has a more worn feel, and I love it for that, because it looks a lot like New Hope, where everything isn't shiny and plastic like the Star Trek films.
We always talk about timelines and the franchises that we love, and now it's kind of like, okay, now we're going to do a Han story, now we're going to do Obi-Wan story.
People do still like to go into movies and watch things that are different, watch things that are not related to superhero franchises.
With him, you might get the Russell Westbrook thing. Kevin Durant leave and he goes, I'm not going anywhere. This is my team. I'm really up it for the long haul.
If you're into like very strategic style games and the co-op games in general, it's a highly recommended game overall.
I added the sense of depth and personality that would escalate fighting games to a higher degree.
That's the Pop Culture Cosmo Show
and the PCC Multiverse every week on the Podcast Radio Network and Apple Podcasts.
And over a dozen of your favorite streaming and podcasting options.
Hey, folks, it's time for Interview Corner, brought to you by Jonathan Williams and the...
WrestlingWithPopCulture.com.
Yeah, that's him. Yeah, that's the one. So anyway, this time, we're going to speak to wrestler and referee Michael Posey, because he was there in Detroit at WrestleMania 23, and so we're going to have a little conversation with him. Take it away, Jonathan.
So, yeah, I guess first, some background on Mike Posey. I discovered you, I guess, is the best way to put it, over the past few years as a independent wrestler here in Georgia. I know you've held many titles in various different promotions, and but then, you know, then I found out you also used to referee, and now you're refereeing again for Ring of Honor. So give us a little background on, were you a wrestler first or a referee first, and how did you get into either aspect of it?
Well, thanks for having me. I started out refereeing in 2000, so it's almost going on 17 years now, almost exactly. This is a little place in Alabama, little small places in Alabama. I mean, there's not a lot of schools in the South and not a lot of places, so you just kind of have to find, kind of sneak your way in where you can. And I referee just little indie, no, I don't call it bad shows, little shows first couple of years. And I finally found myself, made my way to it was NWA Wildside at the time. And I started there in 2002. And then at the time, Bill Behrens, he was booking Wildside. He was also booking some of the guys for, back then they had, TNA was running the Asylum, you know, in Nashville, and he would book all the extra guys for explosion matches. And I just kind of showed up every week, and I refereed the explosion matches the first 3 or 4 months, and then finally I just kept showing up, and they finally let me work. It was, back then it was just Wednesday night pay-per-views, and just worked my way into being on the Wednesday night pay-per-views. And then from there, I stayed there for about the next 2 years until I think it was March 2005. I never had a contract at TNA, so I was able to get a dark match or a trial match at it was a Raw in Atlanta, and then one in Birmingham, and then it just kind of went from there. When they started Deep South Wrestling, WWE did, in McDonough in 2005, I just kind of showed up there too. They didn't really have a ref. Well, they had Nick Patrick, which was Jody Hamilton's son, but he wasn't going to referee the shows. So I just kind of showed up and just kind of went to practice every day as the only referee to do stuff. And I finally got a spot there for a year. And then I stayed in Deep South from July of 05 to July of 06, which was about the time they started the ECW show, WWE's version of ECW. And the timing was just good there to where they needed a referee. I mean, they were starting the third brand eventually. I mean, eventually it's what NXT is today, but back then it was their version. They wanted to have a third touring brand, and they needed another ref. And that whole time I was learning to put the ring up, and they needed a ring crew ref for each tour. So I just kind of fell into that spot too and ended up there. But the whole time I was always training to wrestle. I guess I should say go back to wrestling. I should say that I was always, ever since I started bumping around and learning, I mean, the best education was being in the ring with everybody, learning how guys put the matches together, how they work. And at the same time, showing up for shows and bumping around, jumping around, right, being a bump dummy, basically.
So we're talking about WrestleMania 23, and I mentioned earlier MVP was a big part of Deep South Wrestling, and there was a few other guys by that point had made it to the main roster and to WrestleMania level, like Matt Stryker and I forget who else, but you know, who were some of the people that when you were in Deep South that you thought would make it from there to the to that level?
Mike Knox was there. I always knew he was good, and he did pretty good for himself. He ended up on ECW and then in TNA. Angel, you know, Angelina Love, she was there. I knew she would be okay. I mean, at the time, he was freaking Deacon, but, you know, Luke Gallows was there day one in Deep South.
Yeah.
And I don't know if he made it up to the main roster by WrestleMania 23 or not. It might have been the next year. I think it was WrestleMania 24. Him and Ray Gordy were a team. But he was there for a long time. Ryback was there back when he was Ryan Reeves. That was before he left and came back in Deep South. Who else?
Matt Stryker.
Stryker was there, yep. He was a he showed up. Who am I leaving out?
I think that covers it for WrestleMania 23. I don't know, was Elijah Burke ever in Deep South? Or was he OVW?
No, he came down one day, I remember, when they were talking about putting the Spirit Squad together, but he didn't want to do it. So, but yeah, I don't think he stayed in OVW. He never made his way down to... Oh, Nick Mitchell, Mitch from the Spirit Squad, he was in Deep South from day one. He was there for a long time.
Well, even Great Khali was here and there.
Yeah, he was there. Khali, Oleg, Vladimir Kozlov, he was down there for a good bit.
We confirmed off the air that you were involved with WrestleMania 23 in the Money in the Bank match, right?
Yes, I was one of the three referees standing outside of the ring. That can be my claim to fame, to say that I was on at least 23.
you did more than just – you were on a couple of WrestleManias, weren't you?
I was on that one, and then I was on WrestleMania 24. I refereed the 10-second long ECW title match with Kane and Chavo.
Oh.
It was literally 10 seconds, but I was there. And then I also did the pre-show match, Battle Royal, if you want to count that, too. That were technically wasn't on the pay-per-view, but you got to get them when you can, you know?
Well, what was it like? That was one of the earlier Money in the Bank matches, and we were earlier talking about how we all feel like, even though Money in the Bank has its own pay-per-view now, it still should be part of WrestleMania. But well, what was it like just being part of that, especially with the guys that were involved? You know, most of those guys, went on to become champion at some point or had other success somewhere.
Yeah, it was cool. I mean, especially looking back now, I mean, heck, it's been 10 years looking where some of those guys are now. You don't realize at the time that it was going to be as big a deal as it was. I think that was the third Money to make at WrestleMania or the second? I can't remember. It was one of the earlier ones.
Yeah, it was early. I feel like it was probably the third one.
The third one?
Yeah, I think it's the third one.
Yes, but you didn't realize how big a deal. I mean, you knew it was something special, but you didn't know. I mean, here we are this many years later still talking about it. And it was also, I mean, I think that's the one Kennedy won, right?
Yes.
Yes.
Yep.
And then they had to do the weird Kabuki-ish thing a couple weeks later because he got hurt. So he never actually got to cash in.
Right.
Yeah, Edge ended up winning it over and, you know, challenging for it and winning it.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was kind of, everybody looks back saying there was only two guys that won the Money in the Bank that didn't cash in. I mean, technically you could say that was three, but, you know, they selective memory on their history there, I guess. But who's counting? Yeah.
So at what point did you make the transition from refereeing to wrestling?
I was literally the day after I got released, the day after I got released. I mean, I was always, by the time I started WWE in 2005, so I'd been in it 5 years. I'd wrestled 60 matches maybe, somewhere under a mask, you know, just here and there when somebody didn't show up. But, I mean, literally the day Johnny called me on a Thursday morning, you know, bud, got some bad news for you, you know. Yeah, you know, the whole spiel. I mean, literally, the next day I was in this little silly show in Alabama somewhere wrestling. I always wanted to referee, but, I mean, everybody, no matter how long, everybody wants to be a part of the show. Everybody wants to wrestle. I mean, that's what you want to do. I love refereeing, and that's what that's my spot, but I mean, that's just what you want to do. You want to be the main, it's an ego-centered business, and people that want to be the main part of the show. So, I mean, I was no different. I mean, yeah, literally the next day I was refereeing, wrestling the next night.
And so when you say you said you wrestled under a mask, was that for WWE?
Oh, no. No.
Okay.
That was just little crappy shows before then.
You were wearing a mask because you were still refereeing for WWE?
Exactly. No, okay. Not even. Well, Dale, I mean, I can say it now. I did about two or three times when I was working there. I probably shouldn't have, but, I mean, what are they going to do now, you know? I think I did three little crappy shows at the time, but yeah, before that, I did a Kid USA, like a Kid America gimmick. I was a Kid Ego, you know, and then usually it was the little indie show. I would wrestle and referee on the same show, but I'd wear a mask so nobody knew. but the day after I got released, I was me, because I always just wanted to be me. You always just want, like I said, it's an ego-driven business, and you want to be you, and you want to put yourself out there. And that's what I did.
So you were released in 2010?
It was January 2009, actually.
Okay. So then you wrestled primarily in Georgia, right? That, like I said, I've seen it. Okay.
Yeah, Alabama, Georgia. Yeah.
So then you did that for a few years. Like I said, you won several titles throughout Georgia, and I'm guessing maybe in Alabama too. And then you started the P-Dog gimmick and the Get Along Gang, which we've talked to a few members of the Get Along Gang on the show in the past. But how did that all come about?
It just kind of by accident, like everything else does. I mean, we were in Cornelia at Anarchy, and that's where I kind of originally started trying out being P-Dog, just mm-hmm. being a wannabe rapper. And we just kind of came up with the idea. I mean, if you had, like, you know, all thuggish type people have a posse, so it would make P-Dog more important when he comes to the ring if he's got, you know, 6-8 people putting him on, you know, all about him. That just makes it all that more important. And CB and Raphael and Mark and, you know, Marco and Nina and all of them, I love all of them. And they just happened to work out that they were the guys that we needed for to be there that night that we did it. And they just, that's how it grew. and I thought it worked out pretty good for us.
Yeah. Well,
we got out of it. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you different members of the group held different titles again throughout Georgia. And then you guys had some Ring of Honor matches and were even on Ring of Honor TV once or twice, yeah. I think. Right.
Yeah. A few times. Yeah. When it didn't get edited out. Yeah.
Well, I remember seeing it a couple times, and then you're at least on some DVDs too, because whenever they'd come through, you'd have a dark match or whatever for the two or three shows that they did in the Atlanta area.
Yes. Atlanta, North Carolina. What else have we got? We went to Texas. We went to somewhere else. I think we had a couple in North Carolina, a couple in Atlanta, yeah.
Well, there was a funny thing that happened. You had done, I think you did two Atlanta shows in a row, and then the next time Ring of Honor came, you were a referee again. And I heard somebody behind me, not realizing you were refereeing the match that was happening at that moment. The guy behind me was like, I wonder why P-Dog didn't have a match tonight. I wonder where P-Dog is now. And I wanted to turn around and say, like, he's in the ring, but I didn't want to screw it up for him. how did you end up, you know, you kind of stopped doing that and went back to refereeing? What was the reason for that?
P-Dog kind of ran its course at Ring of Honor. I mean, I wish it would have gone more, but, I mean, you have to have the right people behind it and the right story. And it just didn't work out. The timing didn't work out. The story didn't work out. I mean, there wasn't much else left to do other than just, you know, get beat all the time. And then you're not going anywhere. And, I've always, like I said, it's an ego-driven business, but at the same time, you just want to be a part of the show. And I always just wanted to be a part of the show. And refereeing at Ring of Honor was one of the things I didn't have checked off my checklist of things to do. And that spot just opened up. You know, Ring of Honor is getting bigger and bigger and bigger. They're growing and growing. So a need for a third referee just, it worked out. And I'm glad to do it. Because, I mean, it keeps you, I mean, you can learn as much refereeing as much as you can wrestling. And the timing on that just worked out good. And I'm glad to do it.
So I see Ring of Honor is going, of course, going to be back in Atlanta on August 26th. But prior to that, Ring of Honor is going to be in London, Liverpool, and Edinburgh. Are you going to be going over there with them, or will your next one be in Atlanta?
The next one will be in Atlanta, yes. The plan, I think, is I'm going to do the TVs and pay-per-views just to help out there. So live events, I think they're good. But I think I'll hopefully be on most of the TVs and pay-per-views. As long as they'll have me.
So, great. I'm trying to think of anybody else who has refereed or even just been involved in WWE, including a couple of WrestleManias, TNA, and Ring of Honor. Do you know of any others, referees specifically, that have done all that? I can't think of any.
Not off the top of my head. I like to think that I'm the only one, but sometimes, I mean, I like to think that, but I don't like to. It's fun and it's important and it's really cool to say, but at the same time, I don't. There's no reason to get a big head over it because, at the end of the day, it's just, you know, it's just wrestling, so it's not worth getting a big. But it is cool to say, though, that's for sure.
Nevertheless, it's official. You beat Earl Hebner.
Yes, that is great. Both Hebners, all the Hebners.
You screwed Hebner.
Yeah.
That's right.
If he wants to come settle, he's more than welcome to come to the ring. Or come to... I mean, that's always kind of been my, I don't want to say gimmick, but I'm not afraid to be, like, some people overthink wrestling or overthink just things in general. Like, how can you referee and still wrestle? I mean, how can you, like, I don't know, why not? I mean, there's no rules to this stuff. That's what, I mean, so if I can do it, I'm going to, especially now, I'm going to jump all over it.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Richard, John, do you guys have any questions for Mike?
I was just going to ask a couple of things. What would have been your dream match to referee? Like, have you ever thought about that?
In general, like in WWE or just anywhere? Yeah,
well, I guess anywhere. Just a match that happened that you would have been like, oh, that would have been cool to have refereed.
There's always a bunch of them. And sometimes you don't realize it until after it's over with because you didn't see how good the match was.
Yeah.
I never got to do a I don't think I got to do a WWE World Heavyweight title match. That would have been cool. I think I did Intercontinental and the tag, the women's. I don't think I ever got to do a world. That would have been fun to say.
Yeah.
Well, the question I've got is that since we can only, you know, speculate or imagine, and while you weren't in the match, you were there with the match, what's it like to be a ground zero of a Money in the Bank match?
Oh, that's very interesting. I mean, it's not as structured, like, the way you put it together as you may think. I mean, a lot of it, there was 8 guys in that match, I think, you know, I don't know who was it, but I remember a bunch of them just sitting around, and then 5 minutes later, it's like, all right, we got a beginning, we got to start, we know how we're starting, yay. I mean, it wasn't like an agent or somebody came up and said, you need to start this way, it's just 8 guys kicking around ideas of how to start. It wasn't like this fancy way of putting it together, they just... they're just sitting there kicking around ideas, and eventually it just kind of morphs into a match. You have the match. Yeah.
Right. You have any close calls?
Do what now?
You have any close calls with some of the high-flying action? Or people falling on the side of the ring or whatever?
In that Money in the Bank?
Mm-hmm.
That was the one where Jeff Hardy put Edge through that ladder.
Oh, yeah.
And it was pretty stiff from what I remember.
Imagine those guys doing something like that.
Yeah. And they knew Edge was okay, but they were somewhat concerned, you know, because that was a rough bump. You know, I mean, the ladder literally collapsed. But I think that was the high spot of the mat, the main, or the biggest bump.
Yes, I believe so.
So you've also been involved with Dragon Con wrestling, correct?
Yeah, I've done a few Dragon Con shows.
Dragon Con's coming up pretty soon. Are you going to be there at all, or will you be doing something for Ring of Honor?
What's the date on it? I don't think I'm...
Dragon Con Wrestling is September 1st, I believe.
It's on a Thursday night.
Oh, it's Thursday night. I don't know. I might have to...
Yeah, they do their wrestling on Thursday night now. Thursday.
Oh, that's
right. Okay.
So it's August 31st then.
I don't think I was there last. I was there 2 years ago, if I'm not mistaken, or maybe it's three now.
I think last year. I think last year was the first time they started the Thursday programming.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And this year they've announced Ric Flair and
Ricky Steamboat
for Dragon Con Wrestling. They haven't announced what they're going to do, but they're going to be there on Thursday night.
Are you talking about WrestleCon or Dragon Con?
This is Dragon Con. This is still Dragon Con.
Okay. In Atlanta, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I'm coming this year. I might have to check into that. I was there 2 years ago. I mean, it's always a crazy scene with all people dressed up in their, like, Star Wars get-ups and superhero outfits. And I mean, it's hard to explain to somebody unless you're just there. I mean, it takes over the whole city, that whole block of streets.
Yeah.
And then they go in that hotel. It's wild.
Yeah, it's unlike anything, really, yes.
And it's kind of expanding now because Dragon Con Wrestling used to be the big thing on Friday night, which was sort of the official opening. And now it's Thursday night, so it's basically Thursday through Monday of Labor Day weekend. And kind of like Comic-Con, I think eventually, or even WrestleMania, eventually I think it's going to be almost a week-long thing.
Right, it just takes over the whole weekend.
Yeah.
Eventually they'll have somebody else will start running a show in Atlanta on Friday night and Saturday night to take over Dragon Con to run against
like WrestleMania weekend, all the other shows.
Exactly. Coming. Yeah.
Yeah.
All the shows in Georgia, everybody will have a Friday night, Saturday night WrestleCon or Dragon Con weekend and they'll all compete with each other. Like a mini WrestleMania.
So I guess my other question, John sort of stole, but I still would like to know, like, what's it like being in front of that many people? Like, I mean, is it as crazy as it seems like it would be?
So the first WrestleMania 23, I didn't take it in. I mean, I'd been there on the road for almost a year at that point, but... Between, like, I did ring crew, and I always say I spent 75% of my time putting up doing ring crew and 25% of my time refereeing. So I didn't have a chance to, not only enjoy it, but take it all in because there's so much involved with setting the ring and the stage and the barricade, all that stuff. But by the time 24 came around, I made a point to tell myself to take it in a little bit more. And then so many people, like 80,000 people or whatever it is. I mean, just look, it's just a sea of heads, and you can't hear them because there's so many people, and it's outside.
That has always fascinated me that happens because I've heard wrestlers talk about it. Like, they don't know if people are enjoying it because they can't hear.
Right.
So they just go blind, you know, almost blind or deaf through this match and not knowing, you know, they may know it's good, but they don't know how it's being received.
Right, because you can't hear that. You can't. You just have to play off your feel for it, but you can't re-engage the crowd.
Yeah,
which is interesting.
So, as a wrestler, you've wrestled you have a pretty impressive opponents list, I guess. You've wrestled who all? Jimmy Rave, Cedric Alexander, Caprice Coleman, Fred Yehi, who's now a big star in Evolve. Lots of people. So who are some? What were some of your favorite matches as a wrestler?
Well, wrestling Jimmy Rave, he really taught me. I mean, he taught me a lot how to pace yourself and how to put the match together. He really kind of put me on his wing, and I always kind of appreciated that because he didn't have to do that. Yeah, we wrestled a bunch of times in different places in Georgia. He was always good off the top of my head. Anytime. I mean, at this point, I just want to get in there with guys that are better than me, that have more experience. That's how you learn. Because sometimes I feel like I'm just spinning my wheels if I'm in there with just doing the same match and the same thing every time. That's where the challenge comes, to not get complacent. But Jimmy really helped me do that. Kyle Matthews, he was always fun to wrestle too. He was really good. He's really underrated. He should be farther along than, or he should be get more notoriety than he does too. I'm sure y'all have heard of him in Georgia.
Yeah, I definitely have. John and Richard are in other areas, but I haven't even seen him locally in a while. I'm not sure what he's up to these days.
He wears a mask now, but
Spoiler alert.
He should definitely, yeah. It's okay. But yeah, I always thought he should get more recognition than he does. And even just wrestling Corey Hollis, we kind of started together, but he's really taken off on his own. And you can still, I mean, I talk to him, still talk to him, and you can always learn something from everybody.
Yeah, I've mentioned, We eventually are going to have him on the show, hopefully, but I've mentioned him quite a few times because he's often in WWE dark matches or like a Braun Strowman NXT squash opponent or NXT or Ring of Honor. He was even on TNA on whatever I forget what they were called now, but the
Delete thing with Matt Hart. Yeah.
So I think there was like, within a couple of weeks, he was on WWE, TNA, and Ring of Honor TV, and I can't think of many other people who've ever done that.
Yes.
Cool. So as far as where people can find you, is I guess Ring of Honor in Atlanta is going to be your next appearance, or do you have anything between now and then? That's August 26th at Center Stage.
I'll be at Peach State Wrestling in Carrollton, Georgia, August 19th, that Saturday before.
Nice.
Wrestling or refereeing?
No, I should be wrestling that one, hopefully.
Is that P-Dog or are you Mike Posey again?
That'll be P-Dog. It's really okay. P-Dog, Mike Posey. It's all the same thing. I try to make it all the same guy. Yeah. I mean, it would be cool. I'm trying to do, like, you know, it could be two different people, but nobody's gone for that yet.
Do you have any social media, anything you want to promote, or?
Oh, just on Twitter. It's TheMikePosey at Twitter, at Twitter.com.
Cool.
Yeah.
Are you doing, Ring of Honor has Death Before Dishonor in Las Vegas coming up in September?
I should be planning to be at both Las Vegas shows, barring any changes. But yeah, I should be there, and then I think they're doing a TV in October in ECW Arena.
Okay, cool.
And that'll be the next two ones after Atlanta.
So ROHWrestling.com is where you can find those dates. I think Peach State has a website as well, doesn't it? Yeah, PeachStateWrestlingAlliance.com.
Yep. I think mostly they do their Twitter, or Twitter and their Facebook page too, at Peach State Wrestling Alliance, or PWA Wrestling.
Possibly at DragonCon.org, yes. Is where you can find information about DragonCon Wrestling. I think that about covers it.
There's other sports shows I pop up to. There's New South Wrestling in Alabama, Hartsell, Alabama. I'll pop up there. I'll pop up in Anarchy in Cornelia. Crap, where else do I go? GCW Wrestling in Alabama. Different places to keep me busy.
Awesome.
Well, all right.
Yeah, it's been great talking to you, Mike. Thanks for coming on.
No problem. Thanks, guys.
Hi, I'm Joe Heath.
I'm Tony Heath.
And we're going to watch every episode of Doctor Who and then talk to you about it.
Every episode?
Every single one.
In order?
From an unearthly child to, you know, the future. And we're going to do it in a podcast that we call...
The Watchathon of Rassilon.
WatchYourRassilon.com. And we're also a part of the ESO Network. So check us out or whatever.
Please.
Stay Rassil Awesome.
Stop trying to make Rassil Awesome a thing.
Nope.
There is one event that defines sports entertainment.
Welcome to WrestleMania!
That inspires from generation to generation.
The irresistible force meeting the immovable object. This place has gone crazy! Austin will not surrender! We are the new champions! Unbelievable monsters! The boyhood dream has come true!
Well, you know, it's been too long, and it's time again to hop into our pro wrestling time machine. This time, we're not going to go back too super far, but far enough as a moment in time in WrestleMania history where, well, it's pretty prevalently key to things that have been going on the last year or two. So anyway, we are going to go visit WrestleMania 23. Where the big match of the night was against the billionaires of Vince McMahon and Donald Trump. So there you go. We're going to talk about that. What do y'all think?
Jonathan actually picked this one to do because it is very prevalent now.
It's timely. It's absolutely timely. Yeah.
Well, I think the we were talking about upcoming episodes, but this was... before WrestleMania 33 this year. So, obviously, there are many reasons why this one jumped out at me. It's the 10th anniversary of WrestleMania 23. Obviously, the political situation at the time and still now is a big part. Is it probably the biggest part of it? And then I just was looking at it and I was like, One of the things I really want to talk about is where some of these people are now. This was only 10 years ago, but you got Bobby Lashley, who, when we were talking about this around WrestleMania 33 this year, he was the TNA World Champion, and he's still in that picture. You know, but I mean, we'll get into all that more. But it was even more interesting when I went back and rewatched this, or like we were just talking about off the air. I'm not sure that I ever actually watched this WrestleMania. I just saw recaps on Raw and SmackDown, and a lot of these matches have appeared on some of the other WWE DVD releases and on the network. So I've seen a lot of this stuff, but I don't think I've ever watched this WrestleMania from beginning to end. So,
yeah, I was kind of looking at that too. And really, like I said, it's only been 10 years ago, but there's really only two or three people that are involved in this in these matches, wrestler wise, that are actually still on the roster.
There's not many, yeah.
Yeah.
And this was a really interesting time for WWE because, you know, as we talked about on our somewhat recent episodes where we kind of recapped the different eras of wrestling in WWE, what was this one called? It was coming out of the Attitude Era, but not...
It's the Ruthless Aggression.
Yeah, so there was still quite a bit of that Attitude Era kind of mentality. Yes. Especially with John Cena, you know, calling his moves like the FU and the STFU and stuff like that, which they no longer... No. They've rebranded those moves.
Whatever happened to the chain gang?
That's what I found interesting. Like, it's only been 10 years, but the PG era was after that. And the PG era has been done for 2 or 3 years. So, really, was the PG era that long? I mean, 4 years, maybe? 4 or 5 years?
Roughly.
Peak of the PG era was probably 2 years, if you think about it. Like, the honest peak, like, where it was nothing but PG. But
I think probably the peak to me of the, or the real advent of the PG era is when they did the guest Raw general manager thing, because they were really trying to become more mainstream TV show.
And do you remember how that happened? It was Donald Trump.
That's right.
Donald Trump bought the WWE.
Leading up to this pay-per-view, exactly.
He bought the WWE. And then he
money from the roof. Yeah.
And then he said he was going to instill the, you know, the special guest every week. And then when Vince got it back, he said, "Well, I'm going to keep that." So. You're right. That's kind of what happened.
So really, this kind of was the birth of it.
Yeah. Anyway. So, you know, something that always, you know, WrestleMania, obviously, I mean, it is the Super Bowl of wrestling. I mean, that's what we always, you know, that's what everybody knows it as, really. It's the biggest event. And, you know, they kick it off with, just like the Super Bowl does, with somebody singing, you know, the national anthem or you know, whatever. And they kicked off this one with Aretha Franklin. And in listening to podcasts like Bruce Pritchard and stuff, it's just so funny how out of touch Vince probably is with reality. Like,
not probably. There's no probably about it.
But like,
why you got to use the word probably?
And especially like I don't know if you listened to the newest episode, John, last week, but
I haven't.
With Paul Heyman, they were talking about Paul Heyman, but Conrad gets hot. I mean, over Bruce, over that very thing, saying that Vince is, you know, out of touch with wrestling and stuff. So it's, but that Aretha Franklin was tough. Ooh, that was a tough one to watch. And actually, it took me about 3 days to watch this. I started Sunday, I think, Saturday or Sunday, and then we're recording on Tuesday. So I just could not. I mean, it's 3 hours and 40 minutes long, and so I just kind of broke it up, and I fell asleep a couple of times. But
yeah, I watched it in 3 segments as well, and then I just today finished it, and on the DVD, I don't know if you watched it on the network or whatever, but I have the DVD, and it doesn't all fit on one DVD.
Oh wow.
Like the main event, John Cena and Shawn Michaels, is on the second DVD, and then all the extras are on that DVD as well.
Okay.
Something I wanted to say before we talk about this specifically, watching this kind of, you know, WrestleMania says it always has, or people always say it's more sizzle than steak, if you will. I've heard that term a lot, whereas, you know, it's more about the showmanship and the fireworks and presentation and stuff like that. And I feel like that makes it harder to rewatch. Because in thinking about this, I don't know that I've ever rewatched a WrestleMania outside of maybe some that when I was younger, You know, like
three, four, six.
I've seen a few times, and the I think nine with the togas. I've seen that one an unhealthy amount of times, actually. Considering people say it's the worst one, but so it just it's interesting to me that it's just it is harder to watch. I think just because I don't know. I don't know the real reason why it's harder to watch because. The wrestling wasn't terrible on this. There were some good matches, but it also made me miss Money in the Bank on WrestleMania. I still think that should be a WrestleMania match.
Yeah, same here. Even when it was its own pay-per-view with a Money in the Bank match for each show,
yeah.
I still think there should have been a Money in the Bank match at WrestleMania so that there's a potential for three different briefcases to be out there.
Yeah, I agree. I think that became because of the kind of match it was, and that gave us at least one work rate match that was all about the wrestling
And it's just more people to have a payday.
That's true. But you could do that. Match. You could do that with the, you know, other lesser matches. So this was a way to do that and have some of the best workers. That are you know working for your company at the time to really put on a spectacular show, and you know, to basically give everybody a little something, you know, and so I think that was I really liked that part of WrestleMania. But by the way, speaking of this, because I just ran across this, it's just kind of a highlight because it is, and it's interesting because I was just listening to Solid Monster, and he was talking about how there's some people who have been complaining. That because of budget cuts and so on and so forth, that WWE has stopped using pyro near as often.
Yep.
And but you know, I kind of agree with Solid Monster in that that's good. That makes it when they do use it all the more spectacular. It got to the point where it was so used so often that it wasn't special anymore. So now when we get to WrestleMania and they pop it all off and it's this big freaking thing, it's going to be a much bigger spectacular. So it works. But anyway, along those lines. The WrestleMania 23 set was the largest set ever built for a WrestleMania event up to that time. It incorporated 414 LED video screens and automated lights, 10 spotlights, 56 searchlights, 50,000 feet of cable for pyrotechnics and other use, and 35 stage flamethrowers used to produce 30 foot high and 6 foot wide flames, all of which gave the set a unique look for each performer's entrance and an expanded stage lighting element of 300 feet in width and 100 feet in height using the specialized stage lighting instruments. The ramp used to reach the ring from the entrance was set 187 feet in length. So that's just to underline that whole thing about what WrestleMania really is, which it's amazing because, you know, as old as I am and some of the people that I know that are similar in age to me or us, but anyway, or us as old timers who have been watching this, you know, in my case, all the way from the first one, how do we always forget that that's what WrestleMania is all about? And we get to grumping and grabbing. It's like, but it is what it is. WrestleMania is not like the other show. Yeah.
I mean, exactly. It started off that way and it's going to end that way. I mean, that's what Vince wants. I mean, and even when Vince is no longer with us and somebody else is in charge, it's still what WrestleMania is going to be.
Well, I like how Al Snow put it because, you know, he said that, you know, he, like everybody else, you know, will forever talk about how great the Steamboat and Savage was. But WrestleMania 3 was about Andre and Hogan, and it always will be about Andre and Hogan. Yeah.
Well, we've had that conversation before. So
yeah, yes, we have.
Sense. I mean, it makes sense when you think about it. Like, But yeah, I definitely wish they would have the Money in the Bank back. I missed it, and this one was good. I mean, this one had a lot of people in it that, I guess now Jeff and Matt are back, but for the most part, not a lot of them are with the WWE anymore. Orton was in there.
This was the first match of the official WrestleMania for this one, right?
It was.
Yes, it was.
So, yeah, it's an interesting match.
Yeah, they had a preliminary match with Ric Flair, Carlito versus Gregory Helms and Chavo Guerrero, and a lumberjack match. But the actual beginning match was Money in the Bank ladder match. Mr. Kennedy, who won over CM Punk, who's gone, Randy Orton, who's still here, Finley, who's working behind the scenes, Matt Hardy, who's just returned, King Booker, who is on the announcing crew, Jeff Hardy, who's just returned, and Edge, who is retired. And, of course, just every single one of those people are fantastic workers. So,
the funniest thing to me about this match was throughout the match, they were talking about Mr. Kennedy. They refer to him as the fastest rising star in SmackDown history. They, I think, refer to him as the future of WWE. 10 years later, he's, where is he now? He's not even in,
No.
He was in TNA for a while and haven't seen him.
It's really funny. And I liked Kennedy or Anderson. But the more and more that I've seen and heard, when a lot of people automatically sometimes will take the side of the wrestler whenever they're, you know, ousted from WWE. But now it looks more and more like that Anderson was his own worst enemy. And he did the same thing eventually in TNA. And, you know, it's just one of those guys that just sometimes can't get along with others or whatever. But it's a shame because he was good. And like I said, though, this was a great lineup. And Queen Charmel was there, too. Let's not forget her.
Yeah, and King Booker is my favorite incarnation of Booker T.
King Booker!
Probably mine, too. I don't know what that says, really. But, I mean, because I was never a huge, huge fan. But the King was really good.
Yeah, he was. And, of course, as I said, Mr. Kennedy won that. But he didn't hold it for very long. As Edge talked him into a match over.
That's right.
Yep, and Edge won it, and he actually went on to become the world champion over the winner of the world champion match later between Undertaker and Batista. So.
Yeah, there were some good spots. I mean, like in every Money in the Bank or ladder match, you know, there's some, it's a spot fest sort of thing. But yeah. I thought the Mr. Kennedy Hornswoggle move was pretty awesome from the top of the ladder.
That's right. Hornswoggle was in that. I
well,
don't have
he wasn't in the match, but, you know.
But he was involved. That's
yes,
what I meant.
Yes, since Finley was there. I mean, Hornswoggle came from under the ring. And
well, I'll just say that on here, it definitely lists Queen Charmel, but they've neglected to put Hornswoggle. So that's
all. Well, he played a very small role.
Okay, so. There was another match after that, and then we get to the Chris Benoit versus Montel Vontavious Water for the United States Championship.
Yeah, the next match, it was, I mean, do we have...
I've already mentioned it. We can just move on.
This was the Andre the Giant versus Hulk Hogan of this WrestleMania. Because Kane slammed Kali the same way
that's
that
true.
Hogan...
Yeah, but it wasn't the... No, the Andre Hogan match was the millionaires or billionaires. anyway, yes, Great Khali defeated Kane. Let's move on.
Here's another interesting one because Khali obviously just made his return, and Kane is now running for mayor.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's true. That's true.
So just every match here, I want to. It's interesting to see where these people are now. So.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Well, I was just going to mention why they did the Andre thing. It's because of WrestleMania 3.
Yeah,
because
it was 30 years. Yeah.
And was 3 at... Where was 3? Was it in Detroit?
It was Detroit, yes.
Okay,
it was in
Detroit. So.
Silverdome. Yeah. Wasn't there also... Didn't Kane have a different look or something?
No. On this one? Uh-huh. Well, he was doing, not really, he carried that meat hook chain.
Oh, okay, so I knew it was something to do with the movie.
Because
he,
evil, but he looked the same. He actually had the head half shaved.
Oh, okay.
It wasn't very noticeable, but it was still there.
Right.
So, he was still promoting that See No Evil, so he had that hook, which I never understood, like, it's like when Samoa Joe started carrying that machete in TNA.
Yes.
Like, come on, what are you going to do?
I'm not going to use it.
Although they did use the meat hook in this match, and it was actually pretty cool. He hooked it on the rope, and he grabbed the chain and was pulling it up between Kali's legs. So
well, that,
he did use it.
You're right, but that's just sort of kind of – it's just the perfect example of how kayfabe works and how what we will accept and what we won't accept. Because certainly hitting somebody with a sledgehammer will kill them.
It's true.
So –
but he, but if you cover the sledgehammer head with your hand and hit
them. Yeah. So anyway, we had a WWE United States Championship title match where Chris Benoit defended against Montel Vontavious Porter.
So before this match, they actually did a backstage segment with
all the legends.
One of those like 5 to 10 minute things. It started off with Crime Time. And Eugene, and then Mae Young and Fabulous Moolah came in, and then from there you had.
Prior to that was all the other divas, right? At the time.
I think so. Yeah, they came in. Yeah, the Extreme Exposé or whatever they were called, and Eugene.
Oh
was...
yeah, I had even forgotten that they had a name.
So. Eugene was dancing with them, and then Moolah and Mae came out dressed like the Extreme Exposé dancers. And then you had Slick come out, which I didn't remember any of this segment because I didn't.
He's a jive soul bro.
And you know, it was just the standard comedy of WWE, but I think it was actually done pretty good. And you had Slick and Ricky Steamboat. Jimmy Hart, you had IRS, Ron Simmons, Dusty Rhodes, Sergeant Slaughter, Howard Finkel, Gene Okerlund, Pat Patterson, and Gerald Briscoe. And, you had Ron Simmons do the damn at the very end. So
always that explanation point of Ron Simmons' damn. One thing I want to say before we move on about Slick is that he's one of the few, and I can't right now off the top of my head think of any others, one of the few managers to have his own entrance music. And not only that, but that at least one or two of his wrestlers came out to that music with him.
Wow.
Jive Soul Bro is his music. That isn't Akeem's.
Oh. Huh. I guess I never thought of that.
Very interesting. Just one of those little, how about that? Moments.
I remember very little of Akeem.
Akeem, the African Dream. You remember very little about him? There's nothing little about him.
But the One Man Gang, you remember a lot about him, right?
Actually, I don't know that I do. Like, I just don't think it was... I mean, I probably remember more of Akeem than I do One Man Gang, but I don't think that's much. I mean, I know the look and stuff, but I don't remember. I just don't remember him having big matches. I mean, I'm sure he did, but
I blanked it out
of my head.
He was a major heel, and then him and really the major foes for the Mega Powers was Big Boss Man and Akeem. They were.
The
Twin Towers versus the Mega Powers. That was the big feud they had most of that year. Yeah, so they were main eventers.
I feel like there was a year in my childhood where I didn't really watch wrestling, and I feel it was around Mega Powers because it doesn't affect me. Like, I don't have...
So the greatest period of Hulk Hogan's career.
No, because for me it was all about Ultimate Warrior. So was that before Ultimate Warrior?
Yeah.
Would
that
have been like WrestleMania 5?
That been, I think, Ultimate Warrior was starting out, maybe a little bit later, but yeah, that's true. I guess that's true.
So, 6 is really when my memories of wrestling start.
Okay.
And so, from, 6 on, I have vivid memories of what happened, but I've gone back and seen stuff, but...
Speaking of One Man Game real quick, one of my favorite gags of the recent weeks was when the Biz Daraj came out that first time, and we saw the new look for Bo Dallas, And I can't remember who said it, but somebody said that, hey, it's the half man gang.
Half man gang.
So that just tickles me to all levels. But anyway, all right. So Chris Benoit defeats MVP. And this really was a long feud these two had eventually as it went on from here. They feuded over the United States title for quite a while and had some great matches. So, and this was, I don't know if this was the absolute beginning of it, or but certainly early on in it, I think.
Yeah, it was early on. And the next pay-per-view the following month was Backlash, which was here in Atlanta. And they had a rematch there. And I was at that event.
Yeah, yeah. And that, of course, I think this is probably the best just straight-up regular wrestling match on the card, without a doubt, because of the two individuals involved versus the others. But
MVP, much like Mr. Kennedy, is, you know, he was great, and they even had their little thing for a while. I don't remember if it was before or after this, but where is he now? Again, he was in TNA for a little while, and I haven't heard of him.
He's got he was a big star in Japan for years, which he had been in Japan before that, and so on and so forth. So I mean, he's one of those guys like Bad News Allen and Tuco Scorpio and so on and so forth that had made their career training in Japan and then went back. But right now, the only thing I know for sure the MVP's done is he is doing a podcast on MLW. But he recently had some trouble. He was working for, I think it was ROH, or no, I think it was Lucha Underground. He was working for Lucha Underground behind the scenes as a booker or writer or something, and then he had a falling out with him or something. So that was the last thing he did. He was working back.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
I think, I'm pretty sure it was Lucha Underground.
Well, I forgot how much I liked MVP while watching this match and his entrance. His entrance was great. He had the cheerleaders and ran out like the football players to the paper and stuff.
It was a fantastic presentation for the character. It was a great character that immediately clicked with the audience. They knew what he was about. It was obviously a Deion Sanders, Terrell Owens type of character. You know, that's certainly a character that people already are, you know, preordained either like or not like because, you know, being football fans or whatever. And the way they brought him in was genius because it immediately made him an important player right out of the you know, box by him,
he was a free agent
bidding between the two, you know, brands or the three brands about who would pay the most money. And he was holding out and so on and so forth. So exactly the type of prima donna player type of thing we've seen in other sports. It worked perfectly for MVP, and I really did. I was a fan of MVP. So.
And amazingly, this gimmick had never really been done before, amazingly enough. I mean, not to the extent of that they went to it, I don't feel.
Yeah.
And it was all MVP. Sorry, John.
A little background on that. When he was in Deep South Wrestling, prior to that, I used to go to their shows a little bit because it was just south of Atlanta. And he had an agent that would come out with him, and he'd always come out. His agent would come out, and MVP would come out on his cell phone, like on the way to the ring, and then finish up his phone call right as he was getting into the ring. And I don't know.
Right.
I don't know why the agent didn't come with him. At least as far as I remember, he never had the agent guy. I guess he got him to that point of, you know, the bidding.
Well, I think that because I'm pretty sure the timing's right. That's kind of like the whole thing where the agent's always on the phone, and that's kind of like what that Tom Cruise movie and whatever.
Jerry Maguire.
Yeah, Jerry Maguire, and then, you know, whatever. But they could have, you're right, they could have went further with that and actually had him as a manager type, you know, ring attendant type of thing. I would think that would have worked with him always having a little headset and his little phone and him take calls from other clients or whatever, maybe. And that could even be like a thing you could use later to get to some discontent between them because the manager wasn't paying close enough attention to his match and he loses because he's talking to another agent or another client. So anyway, I think that Chris Benoit was a perfect opponent for MPP, is that you know, they couldn't be more opposite. Chris Benoit's all, you know, straightforward, badass, you know, no-nonsense type of wrestler versus the, you know, prima donna, you know, type of situation. But this also, I think this feud worked to give MVP credibility, where he was able to hold his own and show his talent against, you know, what everybody at the time, well, not everywhere, where a lot of people at the time considered Chris Benoit the best in the business. So it worked. And Chris retained his United States championship.
Are we allowed to mention his name? Is
there I've said it about 15 times now.
So, I
wasn't going to say, like, where is this guy now with Chris Benoit?
Well, we all know where he is. I mean, and it's pretty hot there, but that's okay.
You know, and honestly, like, I don't know when we'll talk about Benoit again. So I'll just say, like, between him and, like, Eddie Guerrero, like, I understand that they're good wrestlers, but I never got it. But while watching this match, I really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed both. I mean, both MVP and Benoit. So I probably need to go back and revisit some stuff that I didn't at the time for some reason.
Did you watch this on the network?
I did.
So this match was there in its entirety, entrance and everything?
Yep. Yep. I mean, Benoit was, I mean...
Yeah, but a while back they started, you know, not with a... It's not a full band. It's just certain things they will show and certain things they'll say. But they won't ever... Basically, you can't search him. If you put him in a search box, nothing will come up. But his matches that are on, like big shows like this, will be there in their entirety.
Well, I think he was in a Money in the Bank match, and I forget which one it was, but from what I understand, his entrance is edited out of it, and even some of his bigger spots in the match have been edited out.
Hmm. I don't see what the point of that is.
As far as I can tell, I mean, his entrance was there. Everything that I can remember was there, you know. Now, as far as announcers, they may have... changed, you know, they may not have talked about him as much, or
there was a part in on the DVD that I have, which, you know, if they still even produce this DVD, they may have changed it, but I think it's JBL that refers to him as a future Hall of Famer or a you know, a shoe-in Hall of Famer or something like that, and I was just like, well, nope.
No, not, that one we can all say is not going to happen.
That isn't ever going to happen. I was a fan of Benoit, going back to the ring and ring stuff. I would encourage you to go and watch more stuff, Chris, you know, because...
as wrestler, I don't have a problem with him. It was just I never got, like, the toothless aggression, and I never got, you know, he's not that good on the mic. But wrestling, no. And see, I'm more of a, you guys know I'm more of like a mic person, and like, I like the presentation of somebody more than sometimes the actual wrestler.
So you're a WWF fan, moving on. Okay. So
I like Brutus, as Conrad would say, I like Brutus the fucking Barber Beefcake.
That's right. You know, I just love for Conrad to know. I would say, hey, Conrad, this is my friend Rich Jewell. He loves Brutus Beefcake.
Not to get too far ahead, but during the whole hair versus hair thing with the barbershop pole and all the whole barbershop thing, I was like, why did they not bring Brutus the Barber Beefcake in for this?
It would have been perfect.
It would have been perfect. I thought about that.
Even if he just came out to actually do the haircut part.
Yeah, that's right. Next, we're going to talk about, as always, one of my favorite parts of WrestleMania going back a while now. As, of course, that is also when they induct the that year's Hall of Famers. And that year was no different. And we had some pretty big names that came up in this particular class. So we're going to discuss that real quick before we go back to the matches. So... give us a rundown of who all was in that Hall of Fame class, Richard Buell.
Well, I think it was very fitting that Jim Ross and Jerry Lawler both went in the same year, and this was the year that happened. The Sheik, the original Sheik, he went in and was inducted by Rob Van Dam and Sabu. And Jim Ross and Jerry Lawler, if you didn't know who they were inducted by, Jim Ross was obviously Stone Cold. Steve Austin and Jerry Lawler was obviously William Shatner, which didn't make sense to some people, but really if you go into the history of it, it does.
Well, the background on that is that he wanted Lance Russell, but the powers that be at WWE didn't think that anybody would know who he is or he's a big enough name. And so they sort of nixed his request, and so Jerry's second choice was William Shatner. But Lance Russell, his old pal and the voice of Memphis Wrestling, was his original choice.
We had Mr. Fuji inducted by Don Morocco.
Recently late Mr. Fuji.
Yes. Right? Yep. And Nick Bockwinkel inducted by Bobby Heenan. And
totally appropriate.
The two big ones in this one, outside. I mean, actually, this was a pretty loaded
So yeah. The Sheik, there ain't nobody in Detroit bigger than the Sheik was. And,
yeah, I mean, it's pretty loaded, but
Big Bob Winkle, one of the biggest AWA names of all time. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. So they cap it off with Mr. Perfect, who had already been passed since then, so his family. Well, he was inducted by Wade Boggs, but his family accepted.
Right. Including a young Curtis Axel.
That's true.
Yep. I didn't see that. I didn't see him on there because they didn't. Maybe I just didn't pay attention, but I didn't see that.
And if I recall correctly, Larry was there, right? I'm sure he was. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then you had American Dream, Dusty Rhodes, who was inducted by Cody and Dustin. And Cody,
current Ring of Honor world champion.
Absolutely. Yeah, just Cody, though. Was Cody in WWE at the time, 2007? Couldn't have been, right?
No.
I don't think so.
No.
So, that's interesting.
No.
So, yeah, that was the Hall of Fame, and they, it was a good one. They brought him out as they always do, and we get to see the Fink, who is really my all-time favorite announcer. I love his re-announcing.
It's just, I'm very happy that they at least let Fink do that, because it adds a element of specialness to it, you know. That if he isn't going to do anything else, at least, if we're talking about the legends, we're talking about Hall of Famers, that Fink would be the one to talk them out, so that's good.
It looks like Cody was in OVW around that time.
Well, yeah, I was going to say he probably was in one of the, trainer places. But
and my girlfriend pointed this out during the WrestleMania 23, where they recap the Hall of Fame inductees and all that.
Mm-hmm.
For some reason, with Mr. Perfect, they had his dad and a couple of other family members on the stage, but they didn't actually mention Mr. Perfect. They mentioned Larry. They mentioned the people that were present. But then when it came to the Sheik, they said, his wife was there, and they said representing the original Sheik, Joyce Farhat. So that was kind of weird that they.
Yeah, it is interesting. Huh. I wonder what that was all about. Very, very.
I don't think it was intentional. And that was probably something I wouldn't have noticed. But as someone who's not as
maybe it's an age thing, because she's an older woman. Old woman, maybe. I don't know. Not that Larry is young, but I guess the wife thing is different. And Kurt's wife. I don't know. Interesting. That is an interesting observation. But, yeah, okay. All fine recipients of the Hall of Fame, all worthy members of the Hall of Fame. And it was a very happy, happy occasion, as usual. So we'll go back to the matches, and we will go with the World Heavyweight Championship match, which, of course, no longer exists, between Drax the Destroyer and Booger Red. I mean, Undertaker and Batista. Where Batista went in as champion at this point, And because Batista was one of the biggest push guys, the really sort of the star of SmackDown, as you know, was the star of Raw, and was already the champion, and everybody knew he was the guy. And at one point, really was considered more the guy than Cena was. This was the year that a lot of people thought The Undertaker for sure was going to lose. Mm-hmm. In a lot of people's eyes, that there was a very good chance that Batista wasn't going to walk out of there losing. And then he lost.
So, and the commentators played that up quite a bit as well. Like,
sure, yeah.
Saying this was the closest, this, you know, the closest to breaking the streak, the closest anybody had come to breaking the streak at that point, and things like that. And then from that point on, it seems like every year it was kind of like that. Like it felt a little bit more like someone was going to break the streak.
Well, I was about to say, I believe that started a run of great matches with The Undertaker at WrestleMania. Before that, you couldn't necessarily say that they're all great, or certainly a run of great ones. But I believe starting with Batista, because it was a good match. That began that string of really great WrestleMania matches for The Undertaker. Yeah, because he beat Mark Henry in a casket match before that, and that wasn't all that great. But that is so historical again, and as it ties into later WrestleManias and wrestling, is that really began that incredible Undertaker run. And as you said, storyline wise, they really started building the streak as being one of the, if not the most important things on WrestleMania card. So
I forget a lot of things, if y'all haven't noticed over the time we've talked, and especially Undertaker, you know, the past few years have kind of, in my mind, it's kind of taken away a little bit of what, you know, The Undertaker, because even when he was doing the Shawn Michaels and Triple H, I mean, those matches were just great, but, you know, the past few have been not as great. But the over-the-top rope suicide dive, as sick of a move as I am of the suicide dive, like, I could watch Undertaker do that all day long.
Yes.
I mean,
well, there is a difference between seeing some smaller guy do it and The Undertaker launching
and
that.
And it is different going over the top, too. I mean, it's just spectacular totally looking. So yeah, I just thought I'd bring that up just because they even replayed it. I mean, it was,
And to kind of add to what you're saying, he looks really good in this match, and the past few years he has not looked very good. He hasn't looked very healthy.
Nope.
But like, he's got very defined, his chest is very defined. He's still got long hair, and you know, he just looks like he's in good shape and still imposing, whether it's his physique or just his ominous appearance. And that's, both of those things have kind of waned a little bit over the past three or four WrestleManias.
Which is why I truly do believe that it looked, and I do believe with all my heart, there's no way that he would have done it the way he did, that he is finally hanging it up, because it will continue to diminish, I think, if he continues on. And he's smart enough to know that. So, yeah. We want to remember him with greatness like that happened in this card, not some of the latter stuff. Next, we have really the only ECW match is actually all ECW. There's a couple of other ECW people in the Money in the Bank, and Bobby Lashley, technically, I guess, was still ECW at this point. Yeah, he was the ECW champion. So, yeah, he was still. So we have a 8-man tag team match with the ECW originals, Rob Van Dam, Tommy Dreamer, Sabu, and the Sandman, and against the new breed of Elijah Burke, Marcus Corvan, Matt Stryker, and Kevin Thorne with Ariel.
And with Ariel. That's very important.
Yes, with Ariel.
Oh, yes.
In watching this, I mean, I was never a huge fan of the WECW, as they call it now, but I didn't hate it or anything. But in watching this, They looked ridiculous walking down the ramp together because they were all very much different, you know, especially Matt Stryker and Kevin Thorne and then Elijah Burke. Like, you look at those three right there.
Yeah, it was a real mismatch team.
I don't even know what Elijah Burke was wearing. I have no idea
no
what
way.
That was.
There's no way that a vampire and a whatever the hell Marcus Corvon was, would hang out with a with a dorky nerdy teacher like Matt Stryker. It just wouldn't happen.
Marcus Corvon was Monty Brown, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
I thought so.
Yes.
And there's a good what happened to him?
Yeah.
I forget what did it. I remember hearing that he had gone into some. Just completely different other profession.
I think so. The only thing I know about ECW, his run there was like, I think he had like a family emergency type thing, like a sick family member or something, and I think that's why he left ECW.
Yes, he took several months off in 2007 for unspecified family issues.
Yeah.
After a 3-month activity, Corvon was released from his contract.
We should do some investigating and do a what happened to episode because Chris Harris is another one that fascinates me.
Yes.
Oh yeah.
Corvon subsequently retired from professional wrestling, and that nothing else. We don't know what the hell he's been doing.
I'd like to know what happened to Kevin Thorne too. I know Ariel went on to she was part of LAX and different things, but. I haven't heard anything about Kevin Thorne or Marcus Corvon. Of course, Elijah Burke is in Global Force Wrestling as an announcer.
And you have two announcers in this. You have Matt Stryker. He's an announcer in Lucha Underground.
Yeah.
Sure. I didn't
apparently,
like his match, so...
Apparently, he is doing independent wrestling, Kevin Thorne. And he's using the name Seven Thorn, apparently. And he has wrestled for Frontier Elite Wrestling and so on and so forth. So, anyway. And he's a pals with Matt and Jeff Hardy. So.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Well,
anyway.
This was you said you didn't like it. I thought it was okay. I liked the idea of it. I liked, you know, I thought, because if you remember, ECW was airing on the Sci-Fi Channel.
Yeah.
So I think Kevin Thorne added a little bit of that element to the new breed.
Yes.
And I remember even it was pretty funny when the vignettes introducing him were happening and Taz was doing commentary and he was like, "Is this a rib?" Because they were just doing these silly things where he was outside the arena and stuff like that.
Right.
But,
go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, I was just, that was my first thought too, was when the new breed, you know, the ECW originals, despite their history and their various rivalries against each other, they always made sense together and they came through the crowd kind of like, what are they called? The Roman Reigns and
the Shield
would do later.
Well, you know, that was Sandman's entrance. That was the way Sandman always entered. So they were just doing a Sandman entrance along with him. Yeah.
Yeah. But seeing them come through the crowd and then seeing the new breed come down the ramp together, just like, what? What is going on here? Especially watching it in retrospect with no, you know, you're not following ECW anymore. So anybody who missed that is just going to be really confused. Like, who are these guys and what are they doing together?
Yeah, and that was the thing with me. I didn't dislike the match, but it could have been a lot better. I love ECW, so I wanted the originals to win, and they did, and so I was happy with that. And I liked all four of the other guys. I just didn't like them together. Kevin Thorne, particularly, is a loner character. The vampire thing with Ariel and all that, the other, he just did not fit with any of the others. Matt really didn't fit with the other two. I could see Burke and Corvon being a tag team. I mean, I think that would have been a great tag team. But if they'd had somebody leading them and kind of forcing them together for the purpose, like Vince coming down there with them, because he's the one who kind of started the whole thing, but he was busy with something else, so if he could have gotten somebody else, but. But somebody coming and saying, hey, you know, you guys, you need to get rid of these old guys. You got to work together at least enough to get rid of these guys. And as far as the ECW originals are concerned, you know, anybody who's watched ECW knows that these guys have either feuded with each other or teamed with each other a dozen times, you know. So it's not hard to believe that they would work together, you know, in the interest of the history of ECW and defending its honor. I didn't certainly like WECW as much as original ECW, but early on, it was pretty good. It's certainly a different breath of fresh air than what was going on with SmackDown or Raw, mainly because Paul was actually running it at the time. But at a certain point when, you know, Vince took more and more control over it and didn't ride with CM Punk like Paul wanted to do and then put Lashley as the champ, I think that's when things started. It just became another, you know, WWE clone. So.
Well, I think it's interesting, too, as our listeners were here in the interview with Mike Posey, he mentions it. But basically, this version of ECW evolved. Well, it became the original incarnation of NXT, which was sort of the game show,
yes.
Or not game show, but elimination reality show kind of thing,
mm-hmm.
which has evolved into what they kind of were trying to do with ECW, which was showcase up-and-coming talent alongside the established ECW guys. So it's kind of weird how things kind of came full circle. I guess basically creating a new ECW as a means of introducing new talent wasn't the best idea because people had this notion of what ECW was supposed to be, and that's not necessarily what it was supposed to be. But obviously NXT's done much better.
yes. And I guess because Vince, I mean, Triple H has been allowed to do more of what he wanted to do without Vince's interference, and Paul wasn't, you know.
Yeah.
Which is why Paul quit, and things changed. So anyway, all very fascinating. And we're going to skip the next match. We're going to go out of order on this because this should be the last one we talk about. So we will skip to Melina, the champion, Divas champion at the time, and her match against Ashley in a Lumberjill match for the WWE Women's Championship. And since this is a mid to late 2000s Divas match, yeah.
Well,
they were both lovely.
It was still for the women's championship, so I guess the Divas title had not yet been introduced. But when all the Lumberjills were coming out and stuff, again, my girlfriend was watching this with me, and she did not watch wrestling at this time period. But she now watches it just kind of when I watch it. But she was just like, what is this? They all look like strippers.
All of them.
I was like, well, I said, that's what it was back then. I said, I think the only one here who was actually a wrestler was Mickie James, and she just happened to be attractive, so she kind of fit in as well.
I would give somewhat of a nod to Michelle McCool just because of her athleticness. She was an athlete, at least.
Yeah.
And she learned how to wrestle. And she
And so Victoria. Victoria's
and
good,
Victoria,
too.
Absolutely Victoria. Which, that's the thing.
And
you
Maria
know,
has come a long way.
She has
since
come
then.
A long way, yes. But Victoria, Michelle, and Mickey James. Well, you know, to me, I always thought, I mean, I like Melina. I think Melina was great as far as what role she played with Eminem. And Ashley was, you know, good looking. I mean, she worked good with Spanky and dang it. I'm going blank. You know, the tag team she was with. Boy, this is just...
I actually completely forgot about Ashley until I saw this. I was like, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, she's hot. I vaguely remember.
She's really hot.
Yeah.
Honestly, the people who should have been wrestling there were Mickie James versus Victoria, as far as I'm concerned.
If you Paul London and Brian Kendrick? Wow, I forgot.
Yeah, London and Kendrick. Yeah, that's right. London and Kendrick, yes.
I forgot all about her association.
Yeah, she was part of it.
Well, when I was saying that, I meant the Lumberjills. I I think Melina's perfectly fine in the ring.
Oh, she's fine. Yeah, she's good. Or Melina against either one of those others. It was Ashley that I had. I mean, trust me, obviously I'm discombobulated. Melina is fine, and that's what I meant earlier when I said not just as the M&M, but she is a good in-ring person, still is. And she had a great character and a great... Melina had it all. She was a good heel champion at the time, but I would have preferred that she had a better partner in this. But it was what it was, and all the girls got a paycheck, and they all looked lovely, and so we're all happy, so... And that takes us to the singles match for the WWE Championship, where John Cena proves that he's just as stupid as everybody else on all the planet by trusting Shawn Michaels.
Well, so this wasn't actually the last match because we have...
I know. I said, well, you're all skipping.
Oh, God.
Well, it was the last match of the... But we skipped the match that we're going to come back to.
I said the last match of the show, not the last match we're talking about.
When you said that, I didn't know when you were talking about. We're on the same page now.
Okay, that's good. So, anyway.
I didn't know this was Shawn Michaels. Like, because I just played the WrestleMania, and I didn't look into what the matches actually were. So when they said the John Cena versus Shawn Michaels, I was excited for it.
Yeah. Well, it's the WWE Championship. And a big storyline leading up to it, they actually became tag team champions together. Shawn kept, being honest that he's turned on everybody that he's ever, associated with. But John's different in that he wouldn't do it. And then, of course, eventually he did. And this led to this title match where John Cena defended against HBK.
And they were tag team champions at this time, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So, if I remember correctly, neither one of them came to the ring with the tag team title belt.
No.
No, that I know of.
It sucked. That was wrong of them.
But, anyway, I think it's a good match. I think it's one of John Cena's better matches.
Was HBK in the match? Then it was a good match.
Yeah, but I mean, this is just proof of John Cena over the past few years. Like, he's good. I mean,
yes.
And I think, this match is just another one in there. Yeah, yep. I mean, there's Super Cena and there's other stuff like that. But I mean, when John Cena when he wrestles, he's really good. And when he's got a good opponent, he's even better.
This is the thing. And it's the pet peeve of mine with people, and just walk of life, period, not necessarily wrestling fans. The wrestling fans are particularly bad about it in some cases, where they misconstrue, or not misconstrue, they mislabel or they misspeak what it is that their problem really is. I had just as much a problem with John Cena's booking as anybody, and I got sick of it, and I got sick of him, and so on and so forth. But I never... That was never anything about how good he was in the ring or how good a speaker he is or any of that other. I mean, John Cena is where he's at because he's that damn good. And so it never was a question of my thinking he wasn't good enough. It was my question that he got stale and he got, boring compared to what he had been before. And so it's the same thing with Roman now. Roman's fine in the ring. He's okay in the mic. But we don't. There's a lot of us that don't like the way they're using it, or has been. I think it's a little better now. But, Cena, it's just one of these things where they lock their heads that, okay, Cena's bad, and that's all there is. But he's not. He's not a bad wrestler. He's not a bad speaker. He's very good at what he does. And when he gets to go in there against somebody like Shawn Michaels or AJ Styles, it hits all the better. But, of course, Shawn Michaels just carried him.
And there was a few spots in this that really shocked me. There was the one where there was like a run of them like trying to get each other in their moves and stuff. It's towards the end, and it's just so well done. I mean, and the audience was really into this match, and I just thought it was, I mean, I really think this is the match of the night. Like, I mean, as much as I love the Benoit and MVP match, I mean, this went on for like 40 minutes and it had a story. It had a beginning, middle, and end. Like, it was very well crafted. I mean, and like you said, I mean, Shawn Michaels is in it, so there you go.
So, one thing I'm realizing now is going back to this time machine to 10 years ago, where the hell was Triple H? Was he injured at this time?
He might have been. I didn't even think about that, actually.
I mean, nowhere to be seen whatsoever.
Yeah, that's a good question, because Shawn Michaels came out to the D-Generation X music.
Oh, yeah, the X was going at the time. Because not too long now, they said that, you know, it was the whole thing where he started, you know, do the Undertaker thing a couple of years later. But yeah, the DX thing was going there in the late 2000s. So he must have been injured. Randy's not on here either.
Yeah, he's in the Money in the Bank.
Oh, that's right. He is. That's true. Okay. All right. Well, okay. So Triple H, rare non-appearance on WrestleMania. Interesting.
But, and ultimately, you know, the outcome of, I had no idea the outcome of this match, to be honest. I mean, I couldn't remember who won or anything.
Dude, it's John Cena. The outcome of the match is da-da-da-da, da da da.
But, I mean, Michael's tapping out.
Oh, yeah, submission,
I mean,
yeah.
That's
yeah.
Huge, I thought. I mean,
that is huge. It's particularly for Shawn Michaels, by the way.
Yes. Well, this was bad. So, the last time, from 2007, the last time he had won the held the belt was 9 years prior, which is crazy to me. Like, that is insane that, I mean, Shawn Michaels probably didn't win the belt that many times.
No, he didn't.
Because he was gone for so long. And
I
want to
say two or three times. I think two or three times.
They said, I think three was when they had said it at this point, and I don't think he won after this.
He never won again, no.
But the pile driver to John Cena on the steps was pretty awesome. And yeah. John Cena had actually held the belt for 20 months at this point, so that was a long run. I mean, I know.
Long run. Yeah, this was the big long run that they made a big deal of that CM Punk passed back. He had that long run because that was the longest one in the modern era before that was Cena's run here. And so they made a big deal about it whenever he passed that one. So, okay, John Cena retains his WWE.
You
going to
say UWF?
UWF. Yeah, Shawn Michaels. And then we will slip back in time a little bit more, and we'll go back to two matches before that, which was the big build match through this card, which was the Battle of the Billionaires with Donald Trump versus Vincent Kennedy McMahon, with each one of their chosen champions, Umaga, unfortunately late Umaga, for Vince, and Bobby Lashley for Donald Trump, and special referee Stone Cold Steve Austin. I was rooting for Vince and Umaga big time. I knew they were going to win because there's no way in the world Donald's going to get shaved, but I was still rooting for him. I guess, I mean, I didn't dislike Lashley, but Lashley just wasn't clicking with me entirely. Loved Umaga. Don't like Trump. Never have liked Trump.
And Armando Alejandro Estrada was great.
Oh, God, yeah. I'm so sad that he's gone. He was so good. So you had a great manager with the first monster they've built in a long time that was really effective. And people were really getting, you know, fearful of, and just built him as this monster. And so, in a great look, and can't, you know, I love it. And when McMahon's on, ain't nobody better than McMahon. And then, of course, always good to see Stone Cold Steve Austin. So it was really, I was ready for this match. I really wanted to see it. So, yeah.
So let's do the where are they now on this match?
Well, Umaga's dead.
Well, what I was going to add to Umaga is, if you remember, at the time, Samoa Joe was undefeated in TNA, and then Umaga had this undefeated streak I don't remember if he still was undefeated at this point.
Yes,
but,
oh yeah, absolutely. That's what the big deal about it. I mean, Vince chose the undefeated monster. Yeah, absolutely.
He was the Intercontinental Champion.
Yes.
So there was definitely
destroying Santino Martella.
Definitely seemed like it was a little bit of a parody of Samoa Joe.
It kind of, you could say that, but it's interesting in that, you know, sometimes things work because they created this whole very throwback Samoan monster, animal man type of angle, which was completely in contrast to Samoa Joe's just, I'm a guy named Joe who just has to be Samoan, I'm going to kick your ass. but it worked for WWE at that time because of the way he looked and a great mouthpiece is Aljondo, and it just worked. It's just, I kind of equate it, I always have, with Kamala, who came out in the, you know, mid-80s, early 80s to mid-80s, and he was a total throwback gimmick. It shouldn't have worked. In the 80s, it should not have worked. You know, this African beast man, but it worked. And I think in both cases, it happened to be the people that did the angles in the way that they presented it, and it just happened to work. So, yeah, it could have been something on those lines, but, I mean, it's one of those situations where I was glad to have these two different, very different Samoan guys going at that time, doing their things.
So is Umaga Rikishi's brother? Because he's the uncle of the Usos.
Yeah, he's the uncle, yes. He's the brother of Rikishi, yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
And just a side note, if you've never heard the story about the Usos, like, Umaga is why they are wrestling. So it's a pretty cool story.
Yeah, they were very close to their uncle, Umaga, yes. Yeah,
nothing with their lives. They weren't wrestling.
They weren't doing anything, and they decided that they were going to follow their uncles. And that's also why they went with the makeup for, you know, as long as they did.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Umaga was much more of a influence and inspiration to them than their own father, yes. And, of course, he had started out as Jamal, and he was actually part of the three-minute warning with Rosie and Matt Hanoi. So
that's a great gimmick. I love 3 minute warning. So I thought it was hilarious. The barber chair had its own entrance.
Yes.
I don't know what else to say about that.
It was pulled by a rope. That's what was funny.
Yeah, there was two ropes. There was one at the front and one at the back. And so I guess it was this even kind. I just imagine, like, so much could have gone wrong on this.
Oh, I at one point it didn't look like it almost tipped over. It seemed like I remember seeing that.
I don't know. It kind of got
hitched up, and then it looked like it was about to go over. I seem to remember thinking, "Oh my lord, there it goes," and it just happened not to. So. Or maybe when that was Molly Holly's, because they had the chair out for that too, a couple years earlier than that. But
and then they carried, they just well at the end of the match they carried all the stuff inside the ring, but
right.
So you had Vince come out. Well, you had everybody come out because they all came out to their own music. So where are they now on Donald Trump? Where do you think he is?
Who?
Thank you. So I've been lost in obscurity. Nobody knows where it's happening.
He just faded away after this.
Faded away.
It is kind of amazing that, like, he has a lot of ties to WWE. I mean, him and Vince are friends. I mean, they have been for years, and he's the president of the United States. So it's just kind of. Yeah, it's
the first WWE Hall of Famer to become president of the United States.
I mean, isn't it crazy to think that? I mean,
well, what's even crazier is that it sounds like the next election might be Donald Trump versus The Rock, which we've talked about before.
Yeah.
I don't know that it'll happen that soon. I do believe that it could happen, but The Rock honestly has so much on his plate, he'd have to completely give up movies. And I don't know if he's ready to do that. I mean, because he's got a string of movies coming out. And he's got a television show, which I've been watching, and it's actually really good.
Yeah, I just don't. It's just, like I said, I think it was off mic. I was like, it's like I'm in a bizarre world. It's just, I still haven't completely wrapped my mind around the fact that Donald Trump is president of the United States. It just seems impossible to me. But it is what it is. He is, and that's the way it is. But
this isn't going to be political at all.
I don't mean it political at all. I don't.
Well, it is interesting that I think reason WWE went to a PG era not long after this was because Linda McMahon became a politician. Yes,
absolutely. And Linda is part of Trump's cabinet right now.
Yeah.
So, that was a major reason why they did that.
But also interesting, I thought was interesting, was during the campaign and the election, and even still today, as far as I can tell, WWE just remained neutral about anything involving the presidential campaign.
Yeah, they usually do. I mean, there's no question that Vince and Linda and them are conservatives, and so they probably usually are for the conservative candidate. But every once in a while you'll see something slip here or there, like it skits or whatever. But for the most part, they don't ever involve themselves in actual politics. So, even with Linda, they didn't really make a big thing about that on the actual shows or anything. They were just trying to change the shows to not reflect too negatively on her. And see, that's another thing. I don't have near as much of a problem believing Linda going to politics than Trump, because Linda, other than a couple of appearances here or there, she mainly has just been behind the scenes running the business. So, that doesn't seem, she is a hardworking business person. But Donald has always been more of a celebrity than anything, even going way back. It's just mind-boggling to me. I guess it's the same reaction that a lot of older people back in the day had to Ronald Reagan when he first...
Yeah, I was going to say, it reminds me of Back to the Future when he goes back in time and he's like, Ronald Reagan's the president, and Doc's like, the actor?
Right, yes. Yeah, so, yeah, I think so. That's pretty similar. Estrada... Of course, left WWE in 2007. Oh, no, he was at ECW 2008. Then he was released, and then he was on the independent circuit for about 4 years there. But then he come back in 2010 to 2012, and he actually managed Tyson Kidd. And then he left again and apparently opened a restaurant in Glendale, Arizona, which has since closed. And he appeared in a Cypress Hill video in 2010. And that's all the information on Estrada. So.
Well, thanks Wikipedia.
Yeah, thanks.
For all that.
Yeah. Right.
All right, I remember reading it.
Wait a minute. Are you doubting that was all in my head?
I remember reading about his restaurant a few years ago, and I was going to try to go, but I guess I won't now.
It was called Baby Steak and Lemonade. That sounds like the same thing you would do in the desert of Arizona, I guess. Lemonade steak.
I thought as a wrestling match that this wasn't the best, but that's not really what this was meant to
be. That's
either.
Not what it was about.
and Lashley, I wanted to say this when we brought up Lashley a little bit ago. I don't know. I mean, like, I always thought Lashley would do better with a manager, more of a Brock Lesnar type thing.
But, yeah.
Because I always liked Lashley, but I just, for some reason, like, in, it just never... clicked, but this was definitely, I think, his best moment, I guess, in WWE.
At this moment, I was kind of down on Lashley, mainly because they had him become the ECW champion, and that's not who I wanted to be the ECW champion, and so I was holding it against him a little bit. But he was fine. I mean, he looked great, and he wasn't bad in the ring for what he was, and it was obviously clear that they were high on him. I didn't last long, but they were high on him. But I was a bigger fan of Umaga, and so I was rooting for Umaga. But But yeah, at that time, because of the ECW stuff, and that was when really the change started coming, when I was like, oh, it's not too bad. And Paul's there, and they're bringing up people like, you know, CM Punk, and is, I like that, and I like the way they had Show as the champ at the time earlier, and I just, Bobby Lashley just didn't fit. He didn't fit at all. So.
Yeah. So
but he fit this far more. This is perfect. So I was kind of happy about it in that respect, because I said, well, they'll move into Raw, and they did, and that was good because he fits better on Raw. So.
I think probably the biggest moment in this match, other than the end, what happened after the end was. Donald Trump actually speared, sort of, Vince McMahon?
Yeah.
Maybe he fell on him, I think.
Sort of tripped. Punched him a few times.
So what was worse, the spear or him taking the Stone Cold Stunner?
Oh, Trump at the end? I don't remember questioning that for some reason.
Well, I don't question it. No, I'm just talking about how badly he took it. I don't
remember it being that bad or as bad as Vince. Vince has never been able to take a stunner.
Oh, Vince,
well.
No, not compared to Vince. No, Vince is the worst.
Vince is just a nightmare. My favorite Vince moment is when is the first stunner that Stone Cold talks about him flopping around like a fish and being all stupid.
By the way, there was a recent Rock, actually. In an interview, we talked about why he overselled the stunner. So, yeah, where because it was a bet. It was a bet, the standing bet that him and Stone Cold had, where you know, where it was basically just a way to amuse themselves. And it's like Rock would say, "Well, I'm going to outdo it this time," and
but it
apparently Rock won a lot of beer.
But I always love that. It's kind of like the Ric Flair thing, you know. I mean, certain things are just good. If it's done good, it'll be good.
Well, you know, and that came up in a podcast. What was it? Was it? It could have been Cornette or somebody. But anyway, they were talking about. I think it was a YouTube thing. It might have been Tully Blanchard, but they were talking about, you know, depending on who you are, you look at things differently. There's this Tully Blanchard grew up in the business, and he's, you know, was a great hand in the ring and so on and so forth. There was a lot of stuff that Flair did at one point that he said that kind of embarrassed him and he thought was overdone and too repetitive and all this and the other. But then later he realized, hey, there are people out there waiting to see that. You know, it's just like in rock and roll or music, you know. There are people are there. They're far more wanting to hear that hit song that they listened to since 1975 than they are some new song they got on the record, you know.
Yeah. So, obviously, everybody probably knows the outcome of this as far as Vince McMahon losing.
Vince gets bald!
And this is one of the better head shavings that has ever happened on TV.
There's a particular shot of Vince that's become a meme. That bald headed and that look on his face, every time you type in Vince McMahon, that picture eventually will show up. It's great.
Because usually what happens is they take like a battery operated pair of clippers and try to do it, and then they're doing it too fast and the hair is all sweaty and so they break down and end up just they leave and then the next night they show up bald. Well. They had, I think, a higher quality pair, and they had two going. So they shaved them pretty much completely bald right there. And then I thought it was great the way Bobby Lashley stacked that shaving cream on top of his head like an ice cream.
Hey, yeah. This is your opportunity. You're in front of the huge crowd at WrestleMania, the biggest show of the year, and you getting to humiliate your boss.
Yeah,
it's not going to come back down against you.
Yeah. But you know, I shave my head every day, and when they started taking those razors to him, I was like cringing because I was like, one wrong little turn and he'd been sliced.
Yeah, definitely. But how do you do your back of your head?
It's a guess sometimes.
Okay.
It's a guess.
Well, I thought it was,
sometimes I go in and get made fun of for the night. So, you know.
I'll say that because recently I didn't shave my head, but I buzzed it. You know, like it was on the buzzer, not a blade or anything. And I could see back there, and so like you know everybody was like saying, oh yeah, you need to work some more on the back.
Yeah. You gotta get a mirror. I mean, you could get another mirror, but that'll be next time on Richard's
next time
barber tips.
Richard's barber tips.
Well, I thought it. I'm trying to remember how the whole hair versus hair. I guess it was just making fun of Donald Trump's hair.
Donald's hair, but he's proud of his hair. And
ultimately, I mean, I think that I don't even think that they brought it up. Like, I don't think they made fun of his hair. I think that Donald Trump's hair was just that big of a
famous.
Famous that, and you know, there's all these controversies or whatever that he is bald, but like he shapes his hair to where he's not. So, you know. I guess that's what...
Well, there was footage when they were kind of recapping the lead-up to this match where he pulls his hair back in the front, and there's hair. It's, you know, so... Yeah.
Keep in mind that the depiction of Donald Trump in Doonesbury for years was just his hair floating around.
I thought it was interesting that you know, the referee and Donald Trump's chosen wrestler
are both
completely bald.
Oh, yeah, true.
Yeah, that's true, too. That's funny. I was just going to say, I did not care for Steve. I feel that I don't like wrestling referees. Like, I get the gimmick, but I don't know. They seem in the way because they don't know where to stand or how to go. And I just felt like Stone Cold was just more in the way than he was anything else in this match. But it wasn't
things. Exactly. It just depends on how they're used. Obviously, they're not professional referees, and that is not an easy job to do. And they have to be correct in what they do. And even they screw it up sometimes, as actually recently in that Iron Man tag match that guy screwed up, but in this kind of match the whole point of it is that this is Vince's old arch nemesis as the special referee who doesn't follow the rules himself, and he's going to do it how he wants to do it, and so him being in the way is just kind of really the point. That's what people expected Stone Cold to be involved. They expected him to call, you know, to beat Stone Cold, and he did, and so that it paid off what it needed to pay off.
Yeah.
But you are right. In general, it should not be overused, and it should not be something, you know, that's done all that often. It should be a special case. So anyway, that wraps us up on WrestleMania 23. We are going to close down the Pro Wrestling Roundtable time machine. We're going to return to the present. And we will not take as long to go back into the time machine because this is a lot of fun, and I would like to do another one in the near future. So, anyway, thank you for listening, and thanks again to Mr. Posey for his wonderful interview, and thanks again to Jonathan for providing it through WrestlingInPopCulture.com, and always thank Richard for making sure that all this runs smoothly. And you know what? Thank Bones, my dog, for 5 years of wonderful friendship and companionship. This is the anniversary of me finding the stray little Bones, and he has been a part of the podcast, and he's asleep
Bones.
Right now.
He's asleep.
Yeah, he's asleep.
He's never asleep.
Yeah, he's snoozing. Anyway, thanks again, folks. As always, any feedback is certainly welcome. We want to know how we're doing and what you'd like to hear. And so for now, though, it's good night, and we'll see you next time. Bum 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 b
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at esonetwork.com.